Hi guys, welcome back to Hear Our Voices. Thank you for coming to hear Cynthia's rental her story and how we talk about the system, and how the system is broken, but we are the advocates who are representing many different walks of life of homelessness. She went through a lot of lives of homelessness. I was only fortunate to go through only one, and that one was a lot, but she has a lifelong story of telling you what her and her family been through and how they overcome and where she is now. So sit back, relax, get your popcorn. Also, before we get, you can have your popcorn right now. You can walk and talk, you know, walk and listen at this point, right? But also follow us on social media, on our all our platforms, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and share our information out. If you want to be on a podcast and share your story, please email us. Everything will be down in the description below. If you're a person who just has resources for New York City only, sorry, we take stories from anywhere. Just give everything down below and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. So thank you for checking us out and carry on with this episode. Bye.
I want to go back to, you know, a couple of years and say, like, how did you get into family shelter? How did you know about it? What made you actually go into shelter? Were you kicking and screaming going there? How exactly did it happen?
Okay. All right. I did not know anything about shelter. Even though I'm a native New Yorker, I went to boarding school in New Hampshire as a little girl. Then I went to school in California. Then I moved to North Carolina. And then finally back up to New York in my early 30s. I didn't know anything about shelter. But my cousin, the same cousin, Sharon, that I said it pulled me aside and warned me about her
cousin-in-law. Got you.
She was an LMSW, and she happened to work at a family shelter called Henry Street Settlement.
Before you go on, tell people what LMSW is so they know what.
Oh, a licensed social worker.
Got it.
Yeah, licensed social worker. As opposed to one who is not licensed. One who is licensed can see patients one-on-one care, they can open their own practice. So because she worked at a family shelter, she said, okay, well, listen, you know, you guys are going to have to go into the shelter system because, you know, obviously you don't have anywhere else to go. So at that time, the EAU was the assessment place in the Bronx for families. Yeah, for families with children. If I tell you the seventh circle of hell, okay, I'm not exaggerating. There, the food was rotten. I mean, literally rotten, okay? Oh. Sandwiches were old. The milk was hot. I had an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old, okay? We had to sleep on the floor in the EAU. It was wall-to-wall people. There were police stationed at the door. You had to go through metal detector. They were doing warrant sweeps then, too, in the shelter system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So yeah, you can basically lose your children right there and get arrested at the same time. Like,
yeah.
That.
Yeah. And ACS come right on and scoop them right on up.
Wow. That's evil. That's real evil. That's crazy. So
you could be on the run, but don't run to the shelter system because they're going to get you.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. So that's how I heard about family shelter. So we went through EAU. I think we were there for about 2 days, 2 to 3 days. And didn't know had never been in the Bronx, so didn't know where to go in the neighborhood or anything, you know, to eat or anything like that. And you didn't want to lose your place because if they called your name and you were out getting diapers for the baby,
right,
you had to go to the back of the line.
Or they didn't supply you diapers either. Wow. If you don't know what PATH supplies, diapers and certain foods and milk for the baby. And they give you sandwich. They give you nasty sandwiches, but
don't forget that the family system was not and is still not covered under Callahan.
Okay.
We just the Coalition and Legal Aid Society just came into agreement with Department of Homeless Services that they would allow us some monitoring of the family system. So then all of those minimum requirements in the Callahan consent decree that applies to single adult shelter right. now loosely applies to families with children.
That's crazy.
Okay. DHS can revoke the coalition's access to the families with children anytime they want to because they're not covered by the consent decree.
That's crazy. And
they would have to go back to court. They would have to go back to the Supreme Court to add families with children.
So what are we waiting for?
Well, look at what Mayor Adams is trying to do right now. Try to stay out of court challenging any court that could challenge the decree.
Right.
Because we don't want to take the chance on it getting turned back.
This is crazy. I don't understand the system. And that's why I don't like, I've said this before in other episodes, I don't like that they have all these, the DV sector. I know they have to be private because, you know, people's lives. They got the men, the women, the adult. But why is it just not under, certain things should just be under the same category. Why do we have to keep going back for this and families not in this?
It started out with single men, Callahan versus Carey. Then a few years later, another lawsuit had to be filed against the city of New York and the governor and the mayor, so forth, for Eldridge versus, I can't think of the name, but for single women to have the right to shelter. So hear me now, for the 2 or 3 years that single men first started having the right to shelter, single women still did not have it.
Right.
And so just by virtue of the fact.
That's crazy.
Okay. So you could still be turned away by the shelter system as a woman during those couple of years. Then, so the women got added to it. But rather than going back to court again, because of the fear of Callahan being struck down, because remember, everything is politics. And you always have to think about who is running the city, who is running the state. Are they aligned with your views before you take someone to court? How does the Supreme Court sit? Are they people who are sympathetic to this cause, or are they people who would love to overturn this because they feel we do too much for the poor anyway?
Right.
Okay.
Wow.
So you got to be very measured in how you take things to court.
It's true.
Right? But because Adams has done this, has brought this up, the right to shelter is being challenged anyway.
Right.
So the only thing that we as citizens can do is let our elected officials know that we want the right to shelter to stand so that people now and in future who have to face homelessness have somewhere to go.
Got it.
Okay. Do not allow them to overturn the Callahan consent decree, the right to shelter in the 5 boroughs of New York. Because if you think we're having a bad problem now with homelessness because of the immigrant influx, which has doubled the system, wait till there's no more right to shelter and you've got all of these tent cities in your streets and your parks, et cetera, et cetera.
We see California. So I don't know if y'all want to have that here.
Yes, here already,
so it might be worse.
Exactly. But the thing is, at least in California, they are trying to come up with innovative ways.
Yes, I've seen.
To house the homeless. They're doing a lot more. They're having these, building these mini houses and yes, communities and, you know, different things. They're trying different things to get people off the street sooner rather than later.
New York City don't got the space for that. To be honest. Other than building up high rises.
Right. But you see, California, because I lived in LA for 15 years, California is this way. New York is this way.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a stockpile, and you can research this. We've got a stockpile of apartment buildings in this city that are unused.
It's true.
Okay, they're being held by what do you call them? What do you call the people?
Corporations.
Corporate, right?
Right.
Okay, they're being held by corporations because they don't want to have to submit to the 2080 rules. Like the 2080 rule is if you have 100 units, I think it is 20% of those units must go to low income or some type of subsidized housing. So out of 100 units, 80 of them you charge market rate, but 20 of them you got to give it a discount, right? In some kind of program. Well, they don't want to do this because they would rather keep their buildings shut.
That's ridiculous though.
But you see, they get tax write-offs. They get end, they're not really losing anything.
Okay? But some of these people's buildings they get tax write-off to making the buildings. So I'm confused. They're making the buildings with our tax money. But you can't rent the place to us who pay for the building? That's crazy. That is crazy to me.
Since you bring up taxes, let me tell you something. Every homeless person in this city still pays taxes.
True.
Because every time they go to the supermarket or the bodega, they pay taxes on that food, on that drink, on those cigarettes, on the clothes that they buy, on the toilet tissue, everything. So they are still contributing members of society.
On another hand, too, a lot of people in shelter, even people living on the street, have jobs. You still taxes right. Feature. Like, how many homeless people have jobs?
That's right. I met a guy who works at AFAC. He works at AFAC. Adult families, infants, and children. He works at the AFAC Intake Center, and he lives in a men's shelter and cannot get his voucher and works for DHS.
Because people are not getting paid enough, first of all, to even get an apartment without a voucher. Let's talk about, there's a lot of things to unpack in this episode. People are working for the city, working for all these places who make all this money, but not paying their workers properly. And because of that, they have to either be in a shelter or get a voucher to help them out. If you pay people properly and have these corporations and people who are over them accountable for their workers properly, we wouldn't even need vouchers. Because a lot of people in a shelter, a good percentage of people in the shelter have jobs.
That's
I was in a shelter, bachelor's degree, and a job, and I was still homeless. Let's think about that. People have degrees. Like, hold the degrees.
I met doctors, lawyers, scientists, teachers, actors. I've met every person from every profession you could think of in the shelter system because they couldn't keep up with the rate of raising rent in New York. $5,000 for a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, when most of the people in Manhattan don't even make $5,000 a month.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
It's not fair. It's not equitable, okay? We're not living in an equitable society. And all you have to do is look at apartment rents and how much, like, they just raised my rent. My daughter owns this co-op. She inherited it, but she owns this co-op, right? They just raised our rent 15%.
That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay, 15%. And this is a Mitchell Lama low income-based property.
Right.
Okay. Fortunately, you know, my daughters are able to handle it. I don't have any income right now since I left the job. Somebody's taking care of me for a little minute till I get it together. But you, there's so much to talk about. There's so much to unpack. There are so many things that are wrong with the system. But then here I am, a person who not only went through the shelter system, but a long bout of mental illness. I mean, girl, I was walking through the snow barefoot, okay? Mm-hmm. And you've met me in person, so you know that nobody would know that if I didn't tell them.
It's definitely true.
Right?
Definitely true.
I'm a testament to the fact that you can hit rock bottom in life for whatever reason.
Right.
But if you want to, you will find a way to build yourself back up. And when you do that, you must have purpose. If you don't have purpose in life, then what's the point?
That's true. Right?
You must have a goal. You must have an idea of who you want to be and hone that into something that's realistic based on who you are now and who you are aspiring to be. Okay. You know, I aspire to be Maya Angelou.
Ooh, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
I aspire to be Maya Angelou. Am I gonna make it? Well, I don't know. But I have a set of principles in mind. I have a plan. And I have faith in whatever you want to have faith in. If right. it's a teddy bear you've had since you were 2 years old, if it's Buddha, whoever. But you got to have faith in something, even if it's faith in yourself. And if it's faith in yourself, then you are really the master of your own fate.
Right.
Okay. If you think you're doing this all through your own will, then it should come out right. And it will come out right if you know when to ask for help.
That's for sure.
Because I didn't see my two older children. I sent my daughter, my son left when he was 14. He came to live with I sent my children to live with their father, thinking that I was the reason that he wasn't able to be a good father and husband. That's how brainwashed I was. So when I found myself mentally collapsing, and I do mean collapsing, I was laid out on the couch, couldn't comb my daughter's hair to go to school. Mm-hmm. Had a bathtub full of dirty clothes that I kept saying I was gonna wash, but for some reason my bipolar just kept making me put more clothes in the bathtub, till then the tub was no good for bathing and it was no good for washing clothes. You know, I had been under contract as a program director with a little community agency in the Bronx called Forest House Community Center. Okay. And when I started having my breakdown and I was on medical leave, I got a letter from them saying that they had decided not to renew my contract, which is illegal, by the way, because I was on medical leave. But I was so depressed. I was going through so much mentally. I never even went and cleaned out my desk. I never filed for unemployment. And a few months later, I lost my apartment. But that last summer, when school ended, this was the ending of 1999, summer of 1999. I told my children's father, come and get her, you know, for the summer, because I got to get myself together. I don't have a job right now, and I'm going through some. So he came, and he took her. I did not know that it would be almost 10 years before I would see my daughter again.
What?
Or my son. Because what happened was, once I didn't have my children to cling on to for dear life mentally.
Right.
Soon as she got on that bus, and I can still sit here and see myself sitting on the stoop. The bus stop was right across the street. Watch her father take her on that bus. That's when my life really fell apart. Right. When I let go of my children, because there was no reason for me to care anymore.
Right. These kids are amazing. I'm just saying. Our kids really keep us together. Like, we go through her, but we try to really push through when we got them kids. Like,
Yes, we do. Because it's not, you know, once you become a mother in particular, and I'm not saying fatherhood is any less important, but once you become a mother in particular, you know, you give over part of yourself for your children, you know, and it becomes not about you so much as relates to you individually, but you as it relates to them as their parent and having to give them the best life possible. So I got rid of the husband. I'm doing well for a minute. And then all of a sudden, I started to implode. I wasn't on medication. I wasn't in therapy. I was working and taking care of the kids, and the trauma from that 15-year relationship finally hit me between the eyes. About 3 years down the road, that's when I fell apart from the trauma of the marriage. And I fell so hard that I could not take care of my children. But I thought it was just going to be the summer and I was going to get myself together and come back and, you know, save the day, right?
Right.
The next thing I knew, I was eating out of garbage cans and walking through the streets, panhandling, doing all kinds of things in survival mode, to be honest. And it was the hardest work I've ever done. People think homeless people are lazy. You don't know what work is until you work on a day-by-day basis to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Where you get so tired that you say, you know what? I'm not going to eat today because I'm just too tired to walk to the soup kitchen. Because I've been walking around all day and half the night trying to find legitimate odd jobs to do so that I can make enough money to feed myself for a couple days. Plus, remember, I was in the prime of my life then, so I had all the still women's
that's
thing
what I'm
going
thinking
on.
About. Yeah.
Okay. And you have to figure out a way to acquire these products, and you have to figure out a way to wash yourself, etc. I had a nice deal with the manager of the McDonald's, the night manager. He was a very nice young man, very compassionate. He used to let me go into the bathroom after hours and bathe myself.
Aww.
And then he would bag up the leftover food, which was supposed to go in the dumpster.
Right.
He would bag it up for us in return for sweeping the drive-through and organizing all the throwaway boxes and neatening the place up. He would feed us.
God bless him. That's nice.
Okay. Never forget that young man. And every time I go back to the neighborhood, I hope to see him, you know, someday. It was the hardest work that I've ever done because every day was about survival. And if you think about that blizzard that we had in, like, I don't know, 2004 or 6 or whatever year it was, the last real huge blizzard that we had. Well, I spent that blizzard in a car with no gasoline. I spent many winters like that. And as a result of that, you know, I have arthritis. I might have gotten the arthritis anyway, but, you know, it wouldn't
happen
have
sooner than it had to happen. Yeah.
And that's why I have, you know, 2 artificial knees, not to mention all the traveling that I did, all the walking up and down and back and forth, begging and working. And you know, it's a lot harder than getting up, taking a shower, getting dressed and going to a 9-to-5.
Right.
Because somebody knocks on your hood at 2 o'clock in the morning and says, my car is stuck, help me push it out of the snow and I'll give you $20. You get up and you push that car.
Right.
And there were times when I was in blackout mode, because I was manic and didn't have sense enough to put my shoes on to walk in the snow. I spent 2 months in a psychiatric unit in the Bronx with a winter cap over my head pulled down to here, thinking that I was invisible. And that as long as I kept that hat on, I could observe without being observed.
Right.
During this period, I didn't know my children's names. I didn't know the phone number. I totally blacked everything out, because I was in so much pain, and so unwell. And I say that in the graphic way that I say it, because if you can envision that person going through that and attach it to the person that you see talking to you now,
right,
then you know that it is possible to get well, to get better, and to thrive.
Right. Sure is.
A lot of times we procrastinate on getting help or addressing issues because we don't really believe it's going to make a difference.
Right.
And I know that that's true because I did it myself for many years. And it wasn't until my last arrest.
We have come again to the end of Cynthia's story. I hope you're enjoying the series. I hope that you can learn many different things. We talk about many different topics. We delve in a lot of things in her life. And she has lived a long time. She told you her age. She's 60 years old. And she has lived a life of victory. She has overcome every obstacle that was put in her way. And I want to make sure that whoever's listening to this know that you can overcome any obstacle if you put your mind to it. Things will get low because nobody's going to have 100% every time, but you can make it through. And if you need help, there's help out there. There's so many resources. You'd be surprised how much resources out there was free or even low cost, depending on your income bracket. Also, I hope everything that we talk about is helful. And I hope if any elective officials are listening, they can take tidbits of our ideas and put it to help the system be a better system, because the system is definitely broken. So come next week to listen to the rest of her story. And thank you for being here, and thank you for being yourself and amazing. Bye.